Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee today opens debate on the new treaty limiting strategic arms. By its own admission, the Carter administration faces a long and difficult fight for approval, but remains publicly hopeful that after all the arguments pro and con have been fully explored, it will be able to muster the 67 votes required for ratification. Many senators, though, believe that ratification will not be achieved without changes. Neil Strauser sets the scene.
It was in the Senate caucus room, scene of many famed hearings, that Republican Senator Howard Baker, during the Watergate hearings, won national attention, with his litany inquiring into Richard Nixon's role. What did he know, and when did he know it? And as the Foreign Relations Committee hearings open in the same room, Baker seems likely to be a center of attention again. Traditionally, the Foreign Relations Committee has been receptive to executive foreign policy proposals. But with Baker now a presidential hopeful and opposed to the treaty in its present form, with the addition of three Republican conservatives after the last election, and with several Democratic doubters, Secretary of State Vance and Defense Secretary Harold Brown appear to have their work cut out for them, even with the committee. They are scheduled to explain the treaty and its terms today. In succeeding days, the committee will hear from the SALT negotiating team, the military, and opponents, and from one man whose position may be key. From former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, negotiator of past arms agreements, who has not yet taken sides on SALT II, but is frequently in consultation with Baker. Neil Strauser, CBS News, Washington.
Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Frank Church, in remarks prepared for the opening session, says the stake Americans have in SALT II is very real. SALT II, he says, is not remote from our everyday lives, not when it would take a Russian missile only 11 minutes to reach Boston, New York, Washington, Los Angeles, or Seattle. Church adds that the committee will examine the pact with the precision of a judge weighing evidence, hoping to send it to the Senate floor for debate by October 1st. For President Carter, this is the seventh day of seclusion at Camp David, as he listens to one group of visitors after another propound their views on the nation's major domestic problems and what should be done about them. CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint tells what's happening today.
The steady parade of visitors to Camp David continues today with members of Congress, 20 of them from both parties in the first group, 15 in a group later this afternoon from the House and Senate. Energy will be the main topic of the morning session. Inflation and the economy to be discussed in the afternoon. Press Secretary Jody Powell hints there may be some changes within the White House and elsewhere in the Carter administration as a result of some of these discussions, which have revealed what he called weaknesses and limitations within both institutions as well as within the media. Powell would not be more specific, but when asked if one change being discussed is the removal of Secretary Schlesinger from his job as head of the Department of Energy, Powell branded that as premature and speculation. He said that what is taking place now is a broad discussion between the president and those invited to Camp David of the social, political, and economic aspects of the nation's problems, particularly as they relate to energy. Powell said Mr. Carter considers these discussions to be extremely important because decisions made over the next few months will have a profound effect on the country through the rest of this century. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
Iran's crude oil production was reduced temporarily over the weekend by two pipeline explosions, not yet explained, while Saudi Arabia has reportedly increased its output of crude oil by 1 million barrels a day for July, August, and September. That won't have any effect on oil prices, though, and Mitchell Krause in New York reports that as those prices climb, two things can be expected to happen.
Consumer demand at some point will go down further, and oil output will go up, at least for a while. But the political problem in all this, say experts, only gets worse. With inflation already galloping along in the double-digit category, higher fuel prices are the last thing needed. They affect everything produced and often cannot be avoided, as in the case of heating oil. Even if low-income families are aided with a fuel subsidy, the money used will only raise taxes and the deficit. Higher fuel prices are also expected to speed the onset of recession, which will mean lost jobs and earning power. Recession and worse has already hit resort and restaurant businesses where layoffs by the thousands have occurred. And though higher energy prices give the oil industry more money to invest in the search for new energy, they also increase the political problem of dealing with those new profits so they don't appear as a windfall. So if President Carter allows energy prices to rise further, he's likely to see his waning popularity take another nosedive. Mitchell Krause, CBS News, New York.
In a move to pump some life into that popularity, 20 Democratic governors at the National Governors Conference in Louisville over the weekend approved a resolution warmly endorsing Mr. Carter for re-election. The president, the resolution said, has, quote, put the country back to work, he has kept the nation at peace, and he has significantly improved the efficiency and operations of the federal government, and he deserves the support of every Democrat. Four governors abstained. They said in general that they liked Mr. Carter, but didn't think this was the time to make an endorsement. The nation's other Democratic governors did not attend the caucus. The DC-10s, owned by U.S. Airlines, may soon be back in operation again after being grounded for more than a month. Bill Cisneros of CBS radio station KNX reports from Los Angeles.
An FAA spokesman in Los Angeles says the nation's DC-10 fleet probably will be flying again within the week. Assistant Administrator for Public Affairs Jerry Doolittle says the FAA will announce today or Tuesday its recommendation that the DC-10 be returned to service. Following an intensive investigation of the aircraft, the FAA is pronouncing the plane to be safe. However, ongoing inspections of the plane will be ordered, as Doolittle explains.
We intend to extend those the frequency of those inspections as it seems to be consistent with safety as our experience builds up. And we may well, this is not yet decided, require a certain measure of redesign in the pylon area, probably not before they return to flight necessarily, but at some point afterwards.
Following the formal announcement of the back-to-the-air recommendation by the FAA, it's expected 24 hours after that, the DC-10 could be flying again. Phil Cisneros for CBS News, Los Angeles.
Now the latest on Skylab, reported from Washington by Bill Plant.
Skylab is falling, but not for much longer. The 6-year-old space station is forecast to re-enter Earth's atmosphere sometime Wednesday. 2/3 of it will be consumed by the heat of re-entry, but some 500 pieces are expected to survive and crash to Earth. Most will weigh less than 10 pounds, but there are expected to be 38 pieces over 250 pounds and 10 over 1,000 pounds. They'll fall over a 4,000-mile track, or footprint, as NASA calls it, with the heaviest debris concentrated in the last 600 miles. It won't be possible to predict very accurately just where this is all going to happen, even 2 hours beforehand when the final prediction is made. Bill Plant, CBS News, Washington.
The unmanned space probe Voyager 2 today is making its closest approach to Jupiter and is focusing its cameras on Europa, second largest of the planet's four major moons. The International Whaling Commission is in session today in London, and Susan Peterson reports that the delegates got a noisy greeting from pro-whale groups.
Delegates to the International Whaling Commission arrived for the first day of their annual conference in London. Environmentalists and anti-whaling demonstrators greeted them with chants and protest signs, calling for a moratorium on all whale fishing in the world. The commission, representing 22 countries, meets together every year to set whale kill quotas for several types of whales. During the opening session, conservationists were allowed to state their views, and John Denver helped make their protest with a song. This year, the Commission will be voting on three strong whaling moratorium proposals sponsored by the U.S. and Australia. But it's expected that a full moratorium has little chance of being passed. If it were, countries such as the Soviet Union and Japan could pull out of the Commission to kill as many whales as they want. At best, anti-whaling delegates are hoping to get a compromise measure with a temporary moratorium on the endangered sperm whale and possibly all whales. Susan Peterson, CBS News, London.
The U.S. dollar closed almost unchanged in Tokyo at around 217 yen, but opened a trifle higher on most of the European exchanges. Gold hit another record high today in London, $291.37 an ounce. In Zurich, it's trading a dollar below that figure.